David, I know there was heightened expectations in Vancouver this season after what they did in the playoffs last year, but they lost Markstrom, and their team defense this year, Kevin Woodley tells us that they're giving up even more quality chances. Like, I guess let's start. What's happened to this team defensively? Where are all the breakdowns coming?
Well, I think you summed it up pretty nicely, actually. It's just a breakdown at every level of the ice. They can't break out of their own zone, and they've improved in the last few games. Like, you know, the record doesn't really show it, but they have played a lot better with their systems. They've actually controlled play in their last three or four games. That win against Calgary, now, I get it. There's stuff going on with Calgary right now. We've seen what's been going on with them recently. But they won 5-1 against Calgary, and that was with Braden Holtby in net. When you come out and you play like that in front of him, and then you come back and do Winnipeg at home, and you do just fine, but then you lose 2-0, you have to start looking at what the actual issues are. And it's these little mistakes. They're mental mistakes, and it's so interesting because not a lot of people in this market are blaming the coach, and the reason for it is the mistakes that are being made aren't with the coach's system. They are minor league mistakes. They are turnovers at your own blue line. They are just not filling your lane correctly and just turning over the puck when you shouldn't be. And it's crazy because, you know, we've all seen minor hockey at some level, right? That's what it's like watching the Canucks at certain points this year. It's been mind-boggling, to be honest with you, to put it quite frankly. And as Woodley said, yes, they have given up worse opportunities than they did last year in front of Markstrom. And Markstrom, we already know, masks so many issues with this team, and now he's not there. And to be honest with you, I don't even know if Jacob Markstrom could save this team right now.
David Quadrelli joins us. And David, Quinn Hughes' offensive numbers are off the charts. The guy's one of the most dynamic players with the puck on a stick, no question about it. Has he missed Tanev? How's Hughes been defensively this year?
Not as great as last year. Now, I don't think it's a mistake that Noah Hanifin didn't have a great year last year in his own end of the ice. He's paired with Chris Tanev, and his numbers go up. I don't think that's a coincidence. And then you see the opposite happen to Hughes. He's paired with Tanev, great defensive numbers. You know, he was used in a matchup role last year when the Canucks really needed to shut down Ryan O'Reilly in the playoffs last year against the St. Louis Blues. Travis Green made that adjustment and actually matched up the Hughes pairing against Ryan O'Reilly, and they were able to shut them down. That's how good Hughes was last year with Tanev defensively. And he's been fine. To like put it simply, when he gives up chances, and the analytics don't look pretty for Quinn Hughes, but it's almost like he's in the right spot, but guys are still managing to get chances on net, and they're still managing to get around him. It's weird watching him, because you try to compare what happened with Chris Tanev using the eye test and what he played like with Chris Tanev and what he's playing like right now with Jordy Benn, and you don't see much difference. So for the numbers to be as skewed as they are in the opposite direction of what they were last year, I really don't think that it was a coincidence that Chris Tanev all of a sudden makes Noah Hanifin look great in his own end, and Quinn Hughes without Tanev doesn't look as solid as last year.
David Quadrelli joins us. And David, Elias Pettersson, early on, you know, he just couldn't score. Now, obviously, you know, he's got a great shot, and the offense would eventually come. But, you know, the Lotto line, as they call it, it's a good name, by the way, in Vancouver, you know, they haven't been the same. How much of that is more like JT Miller was the driver of that line last year? Like, he was incredible. And maybe is him not being the same and then starting the season injured that they've just kind of been playing catch up all year?
Absolutely. I think you're right. They had to stumble out of the gate because JT Miller, you know, listen, the guy comes up from Pittsburgh, has a two-week quarantine, goes to training camp, has a good training camp, and then immediately has to go back into quarantine for, I think it was 8 days total. That's not easy for a player to do, and they need to come back. And yes, his point totals have been there. It looks good there, but when you watch the game, you really see that he's not playing like he did last year. And you're right, he's a major part of the Lotto line. It's been interesting because Brock Besser, who is a bit more of a passenger on that line, I think, and more of a finisher, has really taken a step forward this year. Brock Besser is one of the few bright spots on this Canucks team. He said at the start of the year that he finally felt healthy from that terrible back injury he had at the end of his rookie year, and it's there with his shot. He said he's able to feel like he did once again in his rookie year, and we're starting to see him show those signs of just being an absolutely terrifying goal scorer. But with JT Miller, I think that's kind of it. He stumbled out of the gate. But another theory that I kind of have been floating around is, listen, when the Canucks traded for this guy from Tampa Bay, they didn't think they were getting the JT Miller that they ended up getting last year. They thought they were going to get a complimentary piece to put with Bo Horvat. Remember, the plan was for Michael Ferland to play with Elias Pettersson. That didn't work out, and Miller was on the Pettersson line. No reason to look back since, right? He was so much better last year, so much better than the organization anticipated, and this year he's playing more like the player that they thought they were acquiring. Look, he's still killing penalties. He can play a solid two-way game, but something's just off with JT Miller, and I'm starting to think that potentially last year was just maybe a career year, and that's all it will be, but he's still a solid player. That's the only thing, right, is, you know, you don't want to come out and drag the guy because he's actually playing pretty well. He's just not playing as well as he did last year.
David Quadrella joins us from CanucksArmy.com. Oilers taking on the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Demko will make his fifth start in the last seven games for Vancouver. Is he becoming the starter?
Oh, absolutely. So when they decided to start Thatcher Demko against Winnipeg in the first game, right after Braden Holtby had a 5-1 victory over the Calgary Flames, I think that's a clear sign to everybody in the organization. It's a clear sign to your goaltenders. It's a clear sign to your fans that Thatcher Demko is your number one goaltender. I think when the Canucks did that, they showed everybody what their plan was. They are moving forward with Thatcher Demko as the starter. Now, the Canucks played more games than any team in the NHL to start the year, so they were forced into a 1A, 1B situation. When you have a guy like Braden Holtby, a veteran netminder, and a guy in Thatcher Demko who's just coming along and still trying to find his footing as an NHL starter, that's a great situation to find yourself in. But now, as the schedule calms down and the Canucks have some time between games, I think we're really going to see Thatcher Demko start to take over, because with the team playing something resembling defense in front of him, they weren't at the start of the year, but now that they are, we're really starting to see Thatcher Demko come into his own, and he's really kind of putting to rest that narrative that he was just a guy who had a really good playoff series against Vegas. This is who Thatcher Demko is. I'm a massive Thatcher Demko fan. I have all the time in the world for him. I think he's a really great goaltender, and I think you're going to see him start to take over some games for the Canucks here down the stretch.
Looking at the matchup tonight, Connor McDavid and his line, you know, McDavid actually went 13 games without a 5-on-5 goal. Nugent Hopkins had 1-14, but they were creating chance after chance, and eventually the dam was going to break, and now it has, with 6 5-on-5 goals in 4 games from that trio. And McDavid, obviously everybody saw what he did on Saturday night. So is it like Bo Horvat and his line, that which D pairing, like who do you think is going to face McDavid the most with Vancouver having last change these next two games?
It's really interesting because they've flipped it so much this year. So when we came into the year, Travis Green, the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, was talking about how he wanted to use the Lotto line in that matchup role. Toward the end of the year, they did that, and it was great. Into the playoffs, same thing. It worked. Pettersson in the playoffs was phenomenal. I think 16 points in 15 games or whatever it was that he played. That's good performance from him, and he was holding his own, matching up against top lines, and they were really showing that they could do that. Again, we've already talked about the Lotto line. JT Miller's not quite there, so they've had to get creative. They've used Brandon Sutter, they've used Jay Beagle, and they've used Bo Horvat. They kind of change it up with every game. It's interesting to see the matchups because Travis Green's a coach who really likes to juggle his lines, and you don't really know what you're going to get from him, but one huge bright spot for this club has been the play of Nils Höglander. Again, a guy everybody knew was going to be super offensively gifted. That's as advertised. Surprised everybody, most of all Travis Green, when he came in and played some really solid defense and showed he can be so good away from the puck. So he's actually been used in that role. They've been able to match up the Höglander line against top line. So I will be really interested to see how Travis approaches it tonight, especially since Edmonton is red hot heading into this one. I'd like to see if he uses the Horvat line or if he goes a different route.
So, you know, so I guess whichever one doesn't get McDavid, the other one gets Draisaitl.
Exactly, and that's what makes playing the Oilers so tough for a team like the Canucks. Listen, if a team has a better bottom six than the Canucks, and by the way, that's most teams in the North Division, they are going to just get outchanced, because if the top six has to contend with the other team's top six and they lose that matchup, every other team is winning the bottom six matchup. That's just the way it is with the North Division. That's just the way it is with the league and how the Canucks' bottom six is constructed right now. Again, the Canucks are missing Tyler Motte. He may seem like a small player for
a lot
of people kind of on the outside looking in, but man, he was solid to start the year. He was driving play great. And again, that fourth line with Jay Beagle hemmed in their own end horribly last year. And that was with Motte. But now, this to start the season, Beagle was one of the best lines for the Canucks, and it was just it was absurd because the top six wasn't performing, but then all of a sudden the bottom six was there, and it was just a total flip of the script. And again, like, they were there, they were generating chances, but again, you can't rely on your bottom six to score, especially when it's headlined by Jay Beagle and Brandon Sutter.
Where's Jake Virtanen at? Is he going to be gone in the offseason? Like, is he showing signs of improvement?
No. I'm pretty sure the organization's kind of kicking themselves for choosing to qualify Jake Virtanen. Again, you look at who they didn't qualify, Troy Stecher. That's a third-pairing defenseman who proved year after year that he could hop into the top four and be effective in that role. Like, it was becoming an annual tradition for Edler or Tanev to get injured and Troy Stecher to step up and play top 4 minutes. Like, there was a time last year where Stecher was playing like half an hour, 30 minutes of ice time every game, and he was just doing it fine. Like, he wasn't getting hemmed in his own end, and that was something that a lot of people pointed to this offseason and said, that's a mistake, especially when you see the contract that Stecher ended up signing in Detroit. It feels like they fumbled that situation a bit, and I know the organization was hoping that Jake could build off of last year, but he just hasn't. And again, this is a guy who just was given an opportunity in the top six to start the year, and he did nothing with it. And I think Travis is starting to get done with Jake. And again, when you've got guys like Hoglander coming in, again, like, listen, Hoglander was given a shot on Horvat's line on training camp. First day of training camp, he was on Horvat's line, and he never looked back. It was just people were penciling in Virtanen, people were penciling in Louis, because again, nobody knew Hoglander was going to be this good. But he came in, he played great right from training camp, and he never looked back since.
David, great stuff, man. We appreciate the rundown. People can read your stuff at CanucksArmy.com. And a critical week for the Canucks and a huge week for the Oilers. If they can somehow sweep, they'll be 10 points up with two games in hand and could almost eliminate Vancouver from trying to catch them.
Yeah, they're going to have to go like 21-9-4, I think, for the Canucks to get anywhere near a playoff spot in their last games here. So we'll see.